There's a growing frenzy of modern life that has people almost desperately, wildly kind of asking, can you live at peace and without stress?
The general assumption in our broader culture is that peace equals the absence of conflict or stress. If we truly do believe that God is good and that God is in control of everything, then that changes that whole dynamic significantly.
Welcome back to the Be Unbound podcast, where we discuss practical Christian living, how to build thriving communities, and how to be extraordinary at the ordinary. I'm your co-host, Jonathan Brush.
And I'm your co-host, David Rethemeyer.
So, David, recently you had a pretty interesting experience on the meeting that we had prior to meeting for this podcast. I was anxious to ask you all about it. You were not one of the few, but one of the many who braved weather and heat and extraordinary crowds to be in D.C. on the National Mall for America's 250th celebration of the 4th of July. And I have mixed feelings about this, David. On one hand, I'm a little jealous because it sounded really cool. On the other, I'm kind of relieved that I didn't have to have some of the same experiences you did in terms of the crowds and the traffic was. And things. And so tell us, how was it? I think this is pretty exciting. So tell us how
it went. It was an adventure, let me tell you. So for one thing, to be clear, we were not actually on the National Mall itself. It sounded like that was an absolute madhouse with full on airport style security. So it was myself and my wife and several of our team members also just went up there to do this. And we actually were across the river in Arlington at the Marine Corps Memorial, which was a fantastic spot to be at. So we got set up there and we got to see some of the flyovers beforehand, which was really cool. I got to see the new Air Force One and B-2 bombers.
Yeah, so tell me about the flyovers, because I saw a schedule that had them like flying over like every 10 minutes from like 1:40 to midnight almost. And I looked at the whole schedule and that seemed almost as cool as the fireworks. So tell me a little bit about the flyovers.
Honestly, yeah. We got there, I think, at like 7 p.m., 7:15, something like that.
So we just caught the tail end.
Yeah. And so like the Blue Angels were there earlier in the day, which I was really tempted to see if we could get there early enough to go see that. I've seen them once before and they're amazing, but that was just going to be absolutely brutal in the heat of Virginia weather right now. So by the time that we got there, actually around 7 o'clock, it was actually very pleasant to begin with. And so when we did get to see just like the handful of flyovers that we did see, it was really cool. But then unfortunately, it did start raining quite a bit. And so we had 7 people and 3 umbrellas in between the two of us. And so in between the lot of us. And so we did have to kind of huddle under the umbrellas, or a couple people ended up underneath picnic blankets trying to survive. And so they unfortunately canceled some of the later flyovers, which was a bummer because there was some cool stuff. I believe some Thunderbirds at the end there. And also the fireworks got delayed because of that. So it went from the fireworks were scheduled to start at 10:30 to President Trump was starting his address at 11. And so it was already, for reference, it's like a 2.5 hour drive for us. So it's already been a pretty long day and we're pretty tired at this point. And so, we pulled up the live stream of, Trump's address on our phones and we were listening to some of it. And, despite what, the content, which, we actually thought some of it was pretty good. We were just at the same time going like, man, we know you're the president. It's the 4th of July, but will you please shut up and just let us see the fireworks? That's what we're all here for. It's already running late. And so he went right up until 15 seconds before midnight is when the fireworks started. But when the fireworks started, I believe it did end up being a Guinness World Record of the biggest fireworks show ever, with over 850,000 fireworks going off.
I've seen that number, David, multiple times. And in fact, the first time I saw it, I got ready to tell somebody and I thought, I must have read that wrong. I must have remembered it wrong. That sounds like a complete exaggeration. And maybe it was 850. I mean, or 8,500. I mean, like, in other words, it was, to be honest, 850 rockets sounds like a lot to me. 8,500 rockets sounds like pushing my imagination, I don't know that I have the scope to get 850,000 rockets into my imagination.
It was wild. I mean, I think a lot of like the big number of those was they had quite a few that were just like set up on the ground that were just kind of like set to fan out that were in, shorter bursts. But there was also some absolutely massive ones as well. There was absolutely have never seen anything like it. And we doubt that we will see anything like it until America 300. So it was a wild experience. It was a very late night driving back, but we were pretty much all universally agreed, even despite the weather, despite the late night, despite the delays, that was worth it.
Well, that sounds really cool. I'm glad to get a firsthand account. I think still winning out is maybe not dealing with DC traffic and all those things, but there is something about 850,000 rocket fireworks show that, I just kind of feel bad about missing it. I had this discussion with our family last night, and I think Caleb and Ashley made a solemn pact that they're going to the 300 together. They have a pretty good solid chance. David, you might have a chance. If you take me, you're gonna have to be pushing the wheelchair. So I don't know that we should lock you into that agreement. But that'll be an interesting reality to see whether that comes about or not. But well, that sounds like a really fun time, and thanks for giving us the account of it. Well, David, this might be applicable to you in terms of your state of mental, your mental state as you were driving back from D.C. So when you were driving back from D.C., did you have a lot of traffic? Was it hard getting out?
You know, I think the best way to put it was that at the very end, I told everybody who was in the car when we made it back, I was thanking God for the fact that despite the best efforts of everyone involved, I did not hit any pedestrians, any other cars, or any deer on the drive back from DC, because at first it was pedestrians, then it was cars, and then it was deer on the respective stages of the drive back. So, yeah, it was chaotic.
Well, then this question that we're considering in this episode seems like it is well suited to your recent experiences. And the question is, can you live at peace and without stress? Can you live at peace and without stress? And the answer is probably not if you're driving 66 and 81 back from the world's biggest fireworks show at 4 o'clock in the morning on the 4th of July or the 5th of July when in Virginia, all deer become suicidal maniacs. I don't know that we're going to apply it to that specific circumstance. But David, it seems to me that there's an awful lot of people who are asking this, and they're asking it in my sense with increased desperation. That there's a growing frenetic or maybe just a growing frenzy, I guess is a better way to phrase it. There's a growing frenzy of modern life that has people almost desperately, wildly kind of asking, is it possible to live at peace and without stress?
Yeah. Yeah. And so let's just quickly like define what we're talking about when we say peace. And so I think like it could potentially be ascribed to a global sense of, world peace gets talked about quite often. That's not what we're talking about in this case. We're talking about much more just a sense of peace in a personal sense. And how that actually gets defined, I think, is probably the first thing that's most productive for us to talk about here, and that I think it's the general assumption in our broader culture is that peace equals the absence of conflict or stress, or essentially the absence of anything that will make me uncomfortable or unhappy. And so I think that that's a working definition that I think our culture works with. But I think that, Jonathan, you and I would say that while I think it is possible for us as individuals to live at peace, our definition of peace would be very different. So I'll let you kind of dig into that a little bit.
Yeah, well, that's worth digging into a little bit because, certainly we're not talking about, global politics here. There will be wars. And so and that's not that's an unimportant topic. It's just not what we mean here. And yes, this kind of peace, meaning that, I live a life of tranquility and calm. Obviously, that's not what we're talking about.
Just Mai Tais on the beach, that type of thing.
Yeah, that's right. And so instead, I feel like to some level, this when we talk about stress, I'm thinking about this, David. There's a stress that comes, for example, when you're doing push-ups. right? Like when you're doing a workout or when you're running, right? Like there's a stress in terms of like, this is hard and it's going to result in some sore muscles and it's going to result, but that's going to result in growth. And so in some ways we actually seek that out, but then there's a different stress, a stress that comes from injury. You know, where like every day is difficult because you can't get out of bed or you can't move or you have a lack of mobility. And so you're constantly.
Or there's a literal injury called a stress fracture.
Right. And so, and that brokenness is prohibiting you from doing what you need to do. I think we're talking about peace and stress in those terms, that it's not an absence of struggle. It's not an absence even of fear necessarily. There may be some, cause fear is pretty close to exhilaration. So you can have pain, peace, and have an absence of stress by medicating yourself, for example, you know, or by being addicted to something where it just kind of like, you know, erases those emotions. We're not looking for that kind of erasure, but we're looking for a way to obtain a level of satisfaction and peace in life that doesn't have us constantly worried about what is broken or inhibited or disabled by what is broken. So I think that's, does that make sense in terms of the, you know, just before we move on, that kind of a observation in terms of what we're talking about, is it possible to live life without this feeling of constant injury, of this constant incompleteness, of this constant worry and dread of what is happening or what is going to happen or this just feeling of being completely out of control and, you know, just sort of being swept along and not having any kind of real say or purpose in life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that is a helpful condition, a helpful setup for it. And I think, a lot of people who would be fairly cynical, especially in our broader culture, would say like, well, that I don't feel like that's possible, or that's probably only possible for like the uber rich and wealthy to be able to obtain that, because especially in the broader culture where, there is nothing beyond this world, they see the primary way to do that is if you have enough money so that you don't have to work and you don't have to deal with the problems of, you know, lacking in resources, then you're able to just get everything that you might want or need that will prevent you from having those sorts of problems. And then you will be at peace, which is an easy assumption to make in that framework. But then you look at the reality of the fact that the rates of depression, anxiety, and suicide among those who are in that level of wealth are astronomically higher than those who are in lower segments of wealth. So I think just that's a really interesting observation as we consider this.
Hi, everyone. My name is Abby Huseman, and I just finished my Ascend Foundations year. And looking back on the year, the impact that Ascend has had on me has been amazing. Like, I am not the same person that signed up for Ascend last June. Before I even thought about Ascend, I knew what I wanted to do after high school. I wanted to become a pilot, go to flight school, the whole nine yards. I started ground school, it was going great, and then I started having seizures. And you can't fly if you have seizures, so the Lord closed the door on that. And after that, I felt stuck. I had no idea what I wanted to do. I had no interest that I loved enough to kind of have a career in, and so I joined Ascend. And it was absolutely amazing. One of the things that really stood out to me this year was something that a speaker said at Basecamp, which is our second live event, and it was, just push a button. And that has stuck with me ever since he said that. Essentially, it's try something new. It's okay to fail. You're going to learn from it. Pick yourself back up. It'll be okay. And I used to be so afraid of pushing buttons that I just wouldn't. And I would miss out on so many amazing things in life because I was so afraid. And now, am I still afraid to push buttons? Absolutely. I don't know if that fear is ever going to go away. But I still do it because I know that it's okay if I fail, or maybe I'll love it and it'll be amazing. An instance for that actually happened this year was, each student has to complete a personal project in the Ascend year, and mine was to train for and run half marathon. And I started to do that, and then my seizures came back, and my doctor said to stop running, so I had to change products entirely. And I decided, well, okay, let's just get my wilderness first responder certification. So I did, and I absolutely loved it. I had no idea that I would love it as much as I did. And so now, this fall, I'm going to get my EMT, and then I'll possibly go down the route to become a paramedic. And it is just so cool how the Lord just, you will make your plans, but he will direct your steps, and he will take you to where he wants you to go. And Ascend really helped me with that this year. And not only that, but the community is amazing. The friends you will make are fantastic. And I did not regret a single second of joining Ascend at all.
Yeah, I think if we use that definition, we press into that, David, I think that there's some sense of being out of control, that there are things outside of my control that constantly jerk me around, a boss that I don't like, financial realities that cause me to pay money and then I have to go earn more money, a car breaking down that causes some sort of chaos or crisis for me, housing situations unstable. Like there's a, to some level, this reality of living in stress and living at not at peace, but in conflict has to do with this lack of control. And so I think the human reaction, I want to say this is not even a cultural reaction. I think this is more of a, maybe it's exacerbated by some of our cultural forces at work today. But I think the human reaction to that is to respond with grasping control. And that looks like some version of success, which we've talked about in the podcast a lot. Some version of fame, fortune, or power, any of those things at least holds out the compelling illusion of control at that point. If I'm rich, I can control my financial outcome. If I'm powerful, I have the levers of power at my control, so I can control outcomes. If I'm famous, I can dictate some of the way my life works. I think all of those have some definite fallacies to them. I don't think that those are actually true statements. But I think that people really look at that and go, there's a life of a frenzied life out there, a frenzied reality. It's going to impact me. I live in sort of stress that these things are going to go wrong. And the way to fix that is to gain control. And I gain control by a good education resulting in a good job, which results in a steady salary, which results in a home that I end up paying off and a nice nest egg. And so ultimately I can get to the point where I control my financial future. I control my vocational situation. And therefore I'm kind of in control of my life. And at that point, I can take a deep sigh of relief and I can think about living at peace and without stress. Does that sound accurate to you?
Yes, I think that's extremely accurate. And because, yeah, any sort of lack of control is terrifying to us because we live in a sense feeling that if we can simply control all of the circumstances that are relevant to us, if we can make sure and have control over the fact that nothing is going to go a way in which we don't like, then we believe that that's the key to success or the key to fulfillment and having peace. And I think that is fundamentally, if you don't have a Christian worldview and you think that this world is all there is, I think it makes sense that you can end up reaching that conclusion, because the only person that you can rely on to make things the way that you want to make them is you. But I think to turn the corner a little bit here and to speak specifically from a Christian perspective, I think it is very helpful and I think needed to recognize for those of us who believe in the fact that God is in control of everything, that is a good thing. If we truly do believe that God is good and that God is in control of everything, then that changes that whole dynamic significantly, because then we can recognize that actually me trying to take control of things would mean God losing control of things. And that's not a spot that we want to be in if we truly do believe that God is good and has a plan for our good and for the good of the world.
Well, and I might add some slight corrective there, which is not God losing control of things, but you being in rebellion and against God's control.
Right.
Yeah. So
right.
I mean,
that's more from just like our perspective of right. We want to God to give us some of the control selfishly. We think very foolishly that we can do a better job than God can.
Yeah, I think that's right. Well, I can speak personally to this. You know, if so, I don't want to hold this up as any kind of thing that's unique. I think that anybody listening has similar and in many cases much more quote unquote stressful environments than the one I live in. But, you know, I live in a life that has a large family, so lots of blessings there. But there is a feeling of lack of control that shows up in interesting ways. We've had a 2-year-old recently who has outgrown the crib and so is in a bed and then can get up early in the morning. He has an amazing ability to control when he gets up, which is whenever we're not up, no matter how early we get up. And then he has this tendency to go downstairs and do destructive things that are dangerous to him and sometimes other members of the household. And so, you know, we've just spent a week where we felt very out of control with that. But having a large family means having people that you care about that are doing things that are outside of your control. And you know, intellectually, you know, there's a risk associated, you know, and so there's a constant background dread and worry that can interfere with everything. If you know, I confess at times an almost panic level of like the odds of somebody having something really bad happen to them, ranging from a broken leg to needing stitches to something catastrophic, you know, they're higher for me than for other people because there's more people, right? And so there's a fear of that. But that fear is weird in that, like, I say it's higher for me. Not really true because, you know, take anybody's life and insert the people they know and close to, and you're going to get the same numbers. You're going to get greater numbers, right? So there's this shrinking of your world where you're all of a sudden like, I'm particularly vulnerable. And then with that, you know, you add a professional situation, in my case, responsibilities in business and things of that nature. And, you know, in case people don't know, no matter what business you're in, no matter what you're doing, if you're operating one that is trying to grow and to make an impact and to make a difference in the world, there are unavoidable risks. There are places where you have to make decisions where, like, if this goes wrong, we're going to really have to pay some prices. And if this doesn't go right, we're going to have to pay some prices. And that ends up being a constant, unending, relentless sort of march. And so, David, I have found that I have accidentally lived a kind of embarrassing portion of my life always thinking over the horizon, going, when blank happens, then I'll take a breath. Mm-hmm. When the kids get this age, when the kids get their driver's license, when the kids get enough hours of their driver's license, I don't think they're going to crash every time they leave the house. When, you know, they enter this particular phase of life, when the business hits this particular amount of revenue, when it has this kind of stability to it, when these kinds of things happen, then we'll be able to rest. Mm-hmm. And spoiler alert, I think maybe if you're looking for one point to take away from this podcast, my conclusion is that that day never arrives short of death. That mm-hmm. The only real rest is the finish line, which could be a whole different podcast in terms of what we think about death and about, mm-hmm. You know, I think there's an author who wrote something about this concept that without death, you're an unending marathon. And David, as you know, an unending marathon is some level of unending
awful.
Pain.
No,
right. And
no,
he
thank
said
you.
The finish line is what makes the marathon bearable. Right?
Exactly.
So there is this reality that short of death, there is no rest there. And so then that brings us back to our question, David. Is it possible in such a world with such a reality to live at peace and without stress? And surprisingly, recently I've discovered yes. And it's not that I discovered some new thing. I started paying mm-hmm. attention to an old thing that was always there. So David, did you grow up memorizing or praying the Lord's Prayer with any kind of regularity?
Yes, I did. That was part of our, like, especially when I was very young, that was kind of one of the first prayers that was taught to me was the Lord's Prayer. And I would learn to recite that pretty young.
Yeah, my grandmother taught to me so early that I don't have a memory of learning it. So what a legacy, what an interesting gift, right? But there is the line, right? Give us this day our daily bread. And I'm gonna divert, David, and I'm gonna tell a sort of unrelated story. So hang with me, David, and audience, because I think this connection between stress and a lack of peace is rooted in fear. That's not a profound statement, right? And I have found recently, David, that most of these fears are like a little child. David, did you fear a monster under the bed or a boogeyman in the closet when you were little?
When I was little, yes, I definitely had a fear of the dark and had multiple nightlights and flashlights around so that if I heard something in the night, I could immediately whip out a flashlight and make sure that I could scare them off with the light. And so that could make sure that I was protected that way.
My parents built our house, and so it was in stages of construction as I was growing up really little. And for a while, the dormer over my door into my bedroom was still unpaneled, right? So it was like framed. Mm-hmm. So it was like two squares. And as a very, very little kid, in the dark, that looked like two giant eyes. And so like there was this act of courage. I had to like run into my room past the monster in the ceiling, right? So complete opposite of being underneath the bed. But of course, in the daylight, there's nothing there. It's just it's just an unpaneled wall, right? And so I find that, as I get older, all those fears are like that. Like those fears, they metastasize and they grow in the dark. And then when you jerk them out in the light, they often shrivel. So here's a strange fear. Hotel chains, and we'll just leave it at that, sometimes ask you how many people are in a room. And I have a deep fear of this question because the amount of people in my room when we travel with a family is generally a fire code violation. And so for part of my life, it wasn't really an option, probably still isn't, to get enough rooms to beat fire code and have that financially feasible. And so for many, many years, we traveled as a family, and I was in constant terror that we get exposed for having too many people in a room. This would always be a little bit of a fear for me every time we're in a hotel. So David, let me ask you a question. How many times do you think we got in trouble, air quotes here, in trouble for having too many people in a hotel room?
Based on the framing of your story, I'm going to guess like maybe once.
Actually, very good guess. It's zero times we got in trouble. I was asked to pay $30 once. And I'm not sure exactly what this worked. Like, apparently there was a higher rate for more people in the room, and so we had to pay a $30 fee. So we're talking about 20 plus years of traveling with the family. The total consequences for me sort of having too many people in a hotel room has been $30 spread over 20 some years. To let you all know, that's not a major hardship in my life. At one point I was like, wait, you idiot. Like, why do you have this trepidation every time you're like, this has never happened, right? Mm-hmm. And so now step into something else. There was another trepidation, which is, in a struggle, business, family, all those kinds of things, there's two things that suddenly became apparent to me. One, when bad things have happened to your family, God has provided the grace and the strength to endure through that. To the point that those bad things were bad and they were not ones we want to repeat. And yet they are not the predominant force in our life. And so we should think it reasonable to trust that when that happens again, we'll survive again. And the second thing is that so many, I think, fears come from a lack of finances because, that's reality for us that finances translates into where we live and all those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And I'm not, I've never been at peace with that fear. I've grown up in a home that never had a lot of money, and because of the choices we've made, we've never had a lot of excess financial stuff either. And yet, there was a certain point where I realized, as I was sort of panicking over some of this, we've never been short. We've never had a lot of excess. That doesn't mean we haven't had to budget and think and plan carefully and all those kinds of things. But, if short means, we had to tell somebody, send the bill collectors we can't pay, that's never happened. And that's more than a lot of people can say. And so God has provided some really good ways. Okay, so you take those two things together and you take this back to the Lord's Prayer. And there's that line there, give us this day our daily bread. And I found a few months ago that I started praying it this way, David. Lord, please give me my daily bread. And please, Lord, help me to believe that it is enough. Now, when I say that I discovered something, it's important to say rediscovered. This is not new information. In fact, it's 2,000 plus years old, right? And then all those verses of the Bible start leaping out of there. You know, I have my hand, he watches the sparrow fall, he counts, he knows the hairs in your head. You know, the whole parable, built two barns, and this night his life is taken from him. And so don't trust in your barns, don't trust in your own stuff, but trust in the Lord. I mean, all those things, they're in scripture, they're in the Psalms, they're in the Old Testament, they're in the New Testament. This is not new information. And yet, David, I've had this interesting season the last couple of months of being able to maybe for the first time in my life to really truly live that deliberately, and attempting to both pray that and lean into it. And for perhaps the first season of my life, I think I can say in these last several months, I have lived with a degree of peace and a lack of stress that had previously been unobtainable. And I say that as somebody who I would not characterize my life as marked by stress and fear. And yet, there was more. It's kind of like one of those things that you're backpacking and you're doing pretty good, and you set the pack down and you're like, whoa, like I can really go, you know, I can feel really light. Mm-hmm. And it was the same kind of thing. It wasn't like I was backpacking and like dying and feeling like I was crushed under heavy burden. And yet at the same time, when I set some of that down, all of a sudden I felt like I was light as a feather and able to walk and to run and leap in ways that I'd never been able to before.
Yeah. And so, and that shift that you noticed, that feeling of lightness, did that coincide with an actual change in the reality of like your finances or the resources that you had?
What an excellent question. It did not. So that's a really important, because you can say back, there's like, oh, so, you know, major windfall came and you were kind of able to relax and stuff like that. No, my general circumstances didn't change at all. In fact, you know, in that period, several sick kids, a trip to the doctor, I mentioned the two-year-old, a pretty significant scare with the two-year-old in terms of his getting up one morning and doing something that was destructive. In some ways, some of those things got worse to some level. No major trackable change in my actual circumstances, but a colossal, noticeable, massive change in my ability to react to the things in my life.
Yeah. I think just where the theme that I've seen throughout this is where you have your faith placed when it comes to how you are going to be provided for, and how you are going to be able to live well, I think makes a huge difference in terms of like where you can find peace. And so, I think that's a phenomenal example that you have, Jonathan. And the example that comes to mind, you know, you're talking about, just the reality of having a large family and lots of kids running around in the house. That makes me think, you know, just kind of in contrast, I remember a few years ago, there was a quote that Hollywood actor Seth Rogen talked about, where he was in an interview and they asked him about like why he and his wife hadn't had kids. They'd been married for quite a few years, and he just said like, oh no, that's like, we never want to have kids, that's ridiculous, like, you know, me and my wife just, you know, love being able to his was just like, you know, smoke weed and just like sit on the couch watching TV. And like, to him, like, that is just like the pinnacle of being able to like live in peace and without stress, is to have those things. I don't know about the rest of you listeners. I'm pretty confident that I can speak for you, Jonathan, when I say that doesn't sound like a fulfilling existence at all. And maybe in worldly terms of him having more resources and, you know, fewer concerns about where he is going to get money, maybe, but at that point, there's so many things that could potentially threaten that balance that are outside of his control. And the only faith that he has is in himself to be able to provide for that. Whereas, Jonathan, in contrast, you're in a situation where you have so many things that are outside of your control. There are, you know, arguably way more things that could potentially threaten the resources that you have. I'm pretty confident in saying that I think that you live a much more fulfilled and you are probably living a less stressed existence than Seth Rogen.
Yeah. So, and even as I was telling that story about, you know, the risk of having children, which sounded sort of silly as I said it, and I wanted to make sure that I corrected that and said, there is something special and unique about parenthood. And so that could be a whole separate podcast. But maybe the more important statement there, and the one I was actually trying to drive at, is the risk of having relationships, to having deep connection with other people, to be part of a community. And so you could take Rogan's, and I read that when it came out, and there's a lot of commentary about it. You could take Rogan's statements a couple of different ways. You know, one way you go with that is you could say, Seth Rogan, you're not immune to the reality of the world. And so tragedy will come and strike. And when it happens, you're going to be in such a lonely place to have to deal with that yourself, right? And so there's a reality to point to everybody else and say, look, you know, having those relationships mean that when catastrophe does strike, you have all this huge support network. But I think there's that's the negative side. The positive side, the inverse is kind of what we're driving at here. There's an undeniable risk to having close relationships because you can't control what other people do and they'll do things to hurt you. And that could be that they do stupid, sinful things. People do that. Could be that bad things happen to good people and you feel that. We have friends, David, who just lost a family member to a tragedy. And, you know, we don't know the family member, but we know the friends who lost the family member. And, you know, I have to say that I've been emotionally invested in this person I don't know because I'm emotionally invested in the person I do know, and that person's close to them. That's a heck of a chain of events to impact you. And yet, there is that reality. But people say this, I was just telling this to somebody, I think yesterday. You know, people always say, well, if I'd known how hard it was to start a business, I would never have done it. And it could be the same thing. If I'd known how hard it was to have kids, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I could probably say that too. Running Unbound, David, has been harder than either you and I ever had the imagination to think. But then they miss the second part, which is the rewards of this have so outstripped my imagination's ability to come up with it that it's not even comparable. Mm-hmm. And that's where we kind of might want to land is that, you know, are there risks? Certainly, probably more than you can imagine. The pain can go deeper than you can imagine. Let's be realistic about that. Okay, but don't stop there. Like it's the worth is so much farther. And then to bring this back, you know, with that kind of reality, with that kind of risk, can you live at peace and without stress? The answer is no, you cannot. Mm-hmm. Only God can provide that. And it requires and because it's such a big risk and because it's such a big stress, it requires a constant return to God to say, give me today my daily bread. Help me believe that it's enough and to trust you. And in there, David, in that answer, that the answer is no. And then it drives you practically to this constant, unending necessity of God. And I think this is where the heart of this whole thing lies, which is this about you living a peaceful, stress-free life? No. Is this about you being able to live the good? No. This is about you conforming to the reality that is present, whether you like it or not, that you live in the presence of God and that you rely on Him for your daily breath, not just your daily bread. And to be able to acknowledge that is the only realistic step you can take towards peace and lack of stress in your life. It is also a step into life. It is a step into the reality that God made you for, which is to live in His presence, to trust Him, and to grow closer to Him as you walk closer and closer to the finish line, which ultimately the grand reward is to live with Him constantly. And that's what I think we'd like to drive home and kind of leave here as we wrap this up, which is, you know, can you live at peace without stress? No, you cannot. Only through Christ. And by seeking Him daily, asking Him for your daily bread, asking for Him to give you His Spirit to fill you and to with the trust that that daily bread will arrive. And then to be able to walk in the light of that reward of what it means to know that you rely on God for every breath. And that can be an exciting, and I would even argue peaceful and stress-free way to live.
Yeah, I think that's a beautiful way to put it. And I think just the biggest thing that I'm taking away from this is just that we are so quick to just reach for control. And the key to finding the a life with true peace and a lack of stress is by recognizing how little control that you have and entrusting that the one who does have control is good and that it is a good thing that he has control, and just relying on him and his provision throughout that. And so that's, you know, it's very easy to say all of these things, and it's much harder to put that into a daily practice. But I think it is important to have that daily practice of surrendering control and understanding that we are blessed with everything that we have, everything, every resource, every communication, every relationship that we have is a blessing. And if we can recognize that and know that God is going to continue to bless us, even if it is going to involve some discomfort along the way, then I think that that can relieve a whole lot of stress, and you can end up finding the peace that comes beyond understanding. So for this week and for next week's wildcard segments, we thought that we would talk about what books we have been reading recently. Jonathan and I think both of us have an affinity for reading. And, you know, I think both of us at, you know, slightly different levels and at different points have either gone from either very avid readers reading a bunch at any given point to not necessarily reading as much, but wanting to read a lot. So. The series that I have been reading through recently that I ended up kind of unintentionally getting Jonathan into is an author by the name of Brandon Sanderson, who writes a fantasy in the fantasy genre, and has a specific series or world called the Cosmere. And his whole specialty is that, for one thing, his books are quite lengthy. Usually they are in the like 600 page range, something like that. And they go all the way up to one of his more recent ones in one of his lengthier series goes over 1200 pages. So they're very lengthy. They're very, you know, in-depth worlds. And they are all, you know, there's different series that take place on different worlds, but they're all interconnected to some extent. And so actually my wife and my brother-in-law both really enjoy those books. And so I started reading them, and then accidentally ended up getting Jonathan to give them a try as well.
Yeah, and that cost me a lot of sleep, David, so just so you know. It also cost me money. I generally don't like to buy Audible books because, you know, you can get them from the library, and I don't listen to Audible books very often. I prefer to read. And I had finished one of those books on a trip. I wasn't expecting to finish it. I finished it because I stayed up way too late and paid for it the rest of the trip. And then I was desperate trying to get all these different libraries to lend me the audiobook for the long drive home, and I ended up having to break down and buy it and listen to it. And it was a long drive, and I was literally trying to extend it an hour to be able to finish the book. So, gentle listener, just realize that these books are good and also addictive, like crack addictive in terms of wanting to finish them. So.
Yes, yes. He's very, very good at building out the world and like setting up the story in the way that, especially once you get, you know, kind of in like the last like 100 or 200 pages, just everything that has been set up is just kind of starting to fall into place. And you're just on the edge of your seat going, what in the world is going to happen? How on earth is this going to get resolved? Usually ends up doing it in a really cool way, I think. And I don't think that in just about any of his books at the conclusion of it, it has resolved in exactly the way that I expected it to. You know, there's usually just kind of the formula of, okay, you know, the there's going to be, you know, the hero is going to pull off some sort of like last minute trick, and, you know, is going to be able to prevail over the bad guy, and everything will work out. And there's some of that, but there's also a lot of circumstances where just something completely unexpected happens. And usually the evil, almost always the evil is defeated almost entirely, but it's always some sort of twist there that just makes it very compelling to read. So I've really enjoyed it. There is a lot of books in this series. I have also been very addicted, and so I have worked my way through most of them at this point, but it has taken me a pretty significant amount of time and quite a bit of dedication to get through the thousands of pages of reading that requires.
I'm just too scared to start the second series because of what happened last time. So.
Well, welcome back to another student feature, and we have decided that for the next few weeks, we are going to be featuring the members of one of Unbound's student leadership teams called the Cabinet. And the Cabinet is responsible for all of the planning and executing on Unbound's biggest live event every year that is called Apex, that happens in Michigan in August, that kicks off our Ascend year every year. And so today I have the pleasure of being joined by Tyus, who is one of the members of this year's Cabinet. So Tyus, thank you so much for joining me and talking to us a little bit about your experience planning Apex this year.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah. So, Tyus, the different members of the Cabinet each have different roles that they play when the team. And so talk to us a little bit about what you specifically have been doing and what you've been working on as your part of experience in the Cabinet.
So the main thing that I've worked on this year has been the content team and the storytelling team. So at the beginning, we're divided up to three teams. Content, which is like choosing speakers, themes, that type of thing. Storytelling, which is the marketing, like emails, website, that type of thing. And then events, which is the activities that we do at Apex. So for the most part, for the largest part of this year, I've been working on content and storytelling.
Yeah, that's cool. And so I think that's an excellent way to transition to a little bit talking about the theme for this year's Apex. Can you give us a little bit of insight into what the theme of this year's Apex is and why you guys chose it and felt that it was so important?
So the theme of this year is Endeavor. And the mandate behind that is like the purpose that a believer has. That was in our Cabinet retreat back in January, where we met to figure out the theme, meet each other, get started on all that. We decided one of the things that we wanted to address was the idea of purpose. That's a big problem for a lot of people today, us included. Like, we understand what we're here for, but sometimes it's not the easiest to do that. So that's how we ended up with Endeavor, courage through purpose. And the idea behind that is like, it's a continued pressing onward. And I think of Philippians 3 verses 12 to 14 and talks about pressing upward to the call of Christ. And that was the idea for our theme.
Yeah, that's really cool. I think that's extremely relevant and helpful for young people today. So for you personally, while you've been on the Cabinet working on these teams, what do you feel like have been the biggest things that you have learned in terms of skills or just, realities or just things about yourself as you have gone about planning this whole event?
I would say, practically, a lot of the things I've learned have been like to listen to others better, to try to understand where other people are coming from. For me personally, I think as I've engaged with the theme and thought about like how to explain it, that's become a really big part of me, and having to think about it so deeply has changed my life in a lot of ways. And I'm hoping that that's the case for students that come, where you get to Apex, you hear speakers, you discuss the questions, you participate in the activities, and it starts to like sink into you. You start thinking about it, and hopefully it transforms your lives in the same way that it's transformed mine.
Yeah. I mean, hey, that's the whole reason for the event, is that so that there can be a lot of people who come and can engage with the ideas and enjoy it together. So, well, thank you so much, Tyus, for joining me and for sharing about this. If you want to learn more about Apex, you can visit beunbound.us/Apex and check out all the details and all the amazing stuff that the Cabinet has put together. But Tyus, thanks for joining me. And we're really excited to see what Apex ends up looking like. Thanks to all of your hard work.
Well, thank you for having me, and we hope to see you at Apex.
Well, thanks for being with us for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed hearing about David's world record fireworks experience. And I hope that we gave you something to think about and pray about in terms of, can you live with peace? Can you live at peace and without stress? No, not apart from God, but that reality should drive you to God. So as we finish, here's our challenge. that you would spend perhaps this next week in a concerted effort to start each day by saying, Lord, give me this day my daily bread and help me to trust you that it is enough. And at the end of that week, we'd be curious to see if that made a difference and if your life looks different and if you feel like you indeed are able to live with more peace and with less stress. Until next time, be unbound.